What's going on, guys? On this week's Excuse My Politics, we're talking about the election that just happened in the Pennsylvania 18th District, what's going on over at the State Department and with Trump's cabinet, and talking about what our president has been up to lately. So let's go. Politics presented by Bad News Media. It is March 15th, and we've got a new Democrat in the House of Representatives, guys. Connor Lamb won the Pennsylvania 18th District, a district Trump won by 20%. It's a huge flip and get for Democrats. This is kind of making its ways through the political circuit. If you weren't caught up because you're not a political junkie like myself, this is a big deal because it not only shows that Democrats can compete in tough districts, but that we can potentially flip them. Based off this makeup of a district, which won't actually be the same district in 2018 due to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court saying in the coming in and saying that the Pennsylvania district maps were voted unfairly for Republicans, so the district is actually going away. But it's a big deal because this is the type of makeup of a district that Democrats shouldn't be able to go in and win. But we ran a good campaign, a good candidate, and we won. Driving home a couple big points. The first is we should be willing to compete everywhere. So often in this country, we find districts that go unopposed because they're thought to be unwinnable, because they're so held tight by Republicans. This is a prime example that we should be willing to compete in every district, everywhere, as long as we recruit good candidates that have a good, strong message and can get the base going, which they did within that district. The other thing that it drives home is this is a razor-thin margin of victory for us. So every vote matters. It's just the latest example. You have this. You have the race in Virginia, which was determined by one single vote. So this November, it is so important to get out and vote because every vote matters. Your vote matters. This is the year that we stop saying that my vote doesn't matter. We get our friends and our families registered to vote, and we get out and vote. Now, the Republicans are having a tough time swallowing this pill because it's not a good one. This comes after Trump's steel tariffs, which Connor Lamb actually took the opinion of Senator Brown from Ohio, where he's actually somewhat in favor of these. But even with that, this comes with the tax cut, which Paul Ryan thought was going to be the winning solution for Republicans going forward. And these intellectual conservatives in the news media thought that it was going to be kind of their winning solution this November. Turns out it's not the case. They actually had to run completely away from that towards the end because it just wasn't working. But they are spinning this as, well, the Democrats ran a conservative, and Trump's calling them basically like a Trump light in a way. And that couldn't be further from the truth. He does have some more moderate centralist positions as far as not going all in on gun control. He is for universal background checks, though. He did say that he wouldn't vote for Nancy Pelosi, which should give us some reserve. And not so much because he doesn't feel like Nancy Pelosi would be a good leader. He's entitled to have his opinions. But the thought train is starting to roll within the media and within intellectual circles within the Democratic Party that are kind of floating the idea that people should run against supporting Nancy Pelosi, which is just such a dumb idea. Nancy Pelosi is one of the best Democratic leaders we've ever had. She is tough as nails. She has been able to hold the Democratic caucus in the House of Representatives together through some very tough times. She got health care through. She helped get a climate bill through. She is a great leader. And she has become the Republican boogeyman, just as any person who is in that position is going to become. It doesn't matter if it's Nancy Pelosi or Connor Lamb, or anybody within the Democratic Party. If you hold a leadership position, the Republicans are going to turn you into a pinata and whack the heck out of you. And they're going to try to put this thought process out there that you should run against them, trying to cause a rift within the Democratic Party. If you have a legitimate gripe against Nancy Pelosi, or you don't believe in the ideological direction of the Democratic Party, that is a different thing. But she has been a fantastic leader. It is, she is getting up there within her career that maybe it's time to get kind of step down, get some new lifeblood and the leadership, but we should not just be whacking at her like she's a pinata just because you think it might win you elections. It's not a proven strategy. It may have worked in this scenario, but I don't think that was the reason Conor Lamb won. He ran on things like being pro-union, pro-choice. He was against the Trump tax cuts. He was for expanded background checks. He was for not cutting Social Security and Medicare. So he's not really a conservative Democrat, as Paul Ryan and the Republican Party would like you to think. He has some more moderate views. That's going to happen, though, especially if we're lucky enough to take back the House of Representatives next year. We're going to have some Democrats that have some more moderate views, but he's still in line with some good things. He wants universal health care, which is huge and will help us get to that marker. We're going to need Nancy Pelosi, though, I think, if we are lucky enough to take back the House this November to lead the Democrats through the Trump administration. I think she's our best chance at really effecting change. So hopefully that doesn't stick where we see a bunch of candidates just coming at her for no real reason other than they think it's politically savvy. But for the time being, we should take joy and feel good about this win in the PA district. We should not take our foot off the pedal, though. Right now, if we can flip districts like this, it's not a blue wave that's coming for Washington. It is a tsunami that's going to hit D.C. I mean, there's something like 300-plus seats that are winnable if we can flip a district like this. Those are districts like Paul Ryan's district, Devin Nunes districts, who are much smaller margins of victory for them during the last election. So this is something where we can really take back a supermajority within the House of Representatives, but we can't give up. We can't become relaxed. We can't buy into the hype that, you know, this is going to happen. It's a foregone conclusion and not show up on election day. We still have to organize. We still have to donate money and resource and time. We still have to show up on November and cast those ballots. Otherwise, this means nothing. And we could be right back in the same place we are today. And one thing we should definitely ram down the throats of Republicans is that terrible, terrible tax cut that Paul Ryan came up with, campaigned for, Donald Trump loved, and Mitch McConnell allowed to get through, who also is part of this. This tax cut is a thing of garbage. It is basically the Republicans telling voters that we're going to give you a box of chocolates, and instead what showed up was a steaming pile of elephant crap. Morgan Stanley's research report concludes that workers are the biggest loser in the Trump business tax cuts. 42.9% of the corporate tax cuts go back to buying shares and dividend and paying out dividends. It didn't go to the bottom line of employees. It didn't go to raises or benefits. It went to the bottom line of companies. 18.6% goes to M&A. 8% goes to pay down debt. 17.3% goes to capital spending, leaving only 13.2% to go to wage increases towards employees. 13% of this bill is going to the middle class working folk people. The rest is going to corporations and wealthy people. And if you don't believe me, Warren Buffett made $2.9 billion off the Trump tax cut. How much did you make? I guarantee you it was not even pennies on the dollar to that. And this tax bill is the only legislative win for the Republicans since Trump took office. And Paul Ryan and intellectuals within the Republican Party thought this was going to be what saves them. This is going to be their winning solution, even though they had to run away from it in the Pennsylvania 18th District. We should be bringing this up in every election, in every debate, in every ad, all time, that what Republicans did is they took away funding resources to put money into the public good, and instead they gave it to the rich and corporations. It's as simple as that. Conor Ramland ran against it. He won his district. We can win if we continue to push through the idea This is what Republicans do when they have full control of your government. They are not working on the behalf of you. They are working on the behalf of corporations and rich individuals. Now, there was also some more news in the news this week. It was one of those weeks where it feels like every hour of every day there's something else coming out. But Donald Trump fired Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State. So bye-bye, Rex. He didn't do it in person, didn't call him. Rex Tillerson, as many who work for Trump found out through the news and then a tweet and then an eventual phone call later, because Donald Trump is a coward. He is not a tough guy. He only plays one on TV. I don't really feel bad for Rex, because he was quite possibly the plague to the State Department. I mean, he gutted the State Department. He didn't seem to have a what and why to what he was doing at the State Department. He refused to fill top positions. He ran off great career officials while at the State Department. So he really set the State Department back potentially generations. So I don't really have, you know, a whole lot of pity for him. But when you are the Secretary of State, you deserve to be fired, if that's going to happen to you, in a respectful way. You don't deserve to see it on TV or to see it by text. But that's who Trump is. He doesn't care about anybody but himself. He's going to humiliate you if you work for him. And that's what happened to Rex Tillerson. So see you later, Rex. You were by far the worst Secretary of State I think we've ever had in hurting America's abilities to further its interests in a diplomatic way and to prevent wars, because that's what the State Department does, helps prevent wars and advances the U.S.'s interest diplomatically. The new State Department chief up is Mike Pompeo, who is currently the head of the CIA. He is going to have to go through a confirmation hearing, which Trump is seeming to want to set up a lot of those in an election year, which is a bold strategy because, you know, it is an election year. A lot of these Republicans are seeing the writing on the wall. They're going to see that they have to run very tight races. So, I mean, getting people confirmed is going to be tough. It's either going to be very tough, or Republicans may see the writing on the wall and go with the "we're going to lose anyway" approach. We need to get everything through that we can. I don't think that's likely, though, because these people are starting to come to the realization that their lives is pretty much going to suck after November if they lose. And if they win, it's probably going to suck because they're going to be out of power and be the minority. But they're still going to want to run close, tight races so they don't get embarrassed. And it's not an absolute bloodbath. So setting up multiple confirmation hearings is a bold strategy on Trump's part. But he's setting one up for the head of the CIA and the State Department, potentially others. But Mike Pompeo is going to be up for the Secretary of State. And he should give us some pauses. He is very well known for his hawkish approach on the Iran deal. He has called for the U.S. to take more active role in bringing down the fall of the Iranian rule. He thinks that they are intent on destroying America, which, you know, yeah, they're not our friends, but he is the classic response to a problem. He would rather go to war than go do a diplomatic solution like the Iran deal. So to give you some context on what the Iran deal is it's a deal between us, France, Germany, Britain, the European Union, Russia, and China with Iran to lower their nuclear capability. And to give you some context into just how serious the situation was when the Obama administration was trying to put together this deal, which was one of their bigger achievements, was in 2013, John Kerry met with Iran's foreign minister. And at that time, Iran had mastered the nuclear fuel cell process. They had built a uranium stockpile that could be enriched to make 10 to 12 pound bombs and was enriching just below the weapons grade. It was moving quickly towards commissioning a heavy water reactor capable of producing enough weapons-grade plutonium for additional bomb or two annually. In other words, Iran was already a nuclear threshold state. So we were running out of time before they got full nuclear capability, which would have been an enormous problem, not only for us, but for the world and our allies. So we partnered with a bunch of other countries, as named before, to try to stop this. We came up with the Iran Agreement. It's an agreement that runs 159 detailed pages and applies to all potential pathways to make a bomb. This is specifically grounded in the transparency rules of the IAEA's additional protocol. This is something that was developed with North Korea experience in mind. No country has gone nuclear with the additional protocol in place. It is that intrusive of a protocol procedure. And we insisted that it be the foundation for any agreement with Iran, and we got that implemented in the deal. Iran had to pay up front, contrary to popular belief. If you watch Fox News or listen to any bozo on the Republican side who's been railing against this deal, they'll tell you America's been paying for this from the very beginning. It's not true. Before Iran ever received a dollar or had sanction relief put into place, the IAEA confirmed that the country had eliminated 97% of its uranium stockpile, destroyed the core of its arc reactor, which blocked the production of weapons-grade plutonium. It ripped out more than 13,000 centrifuges, halted uranium enrichment at the underground Fordo site, and opened its program to intrusive monitoring. In 8 consecutive reports, the IAEA has confirmed that it is working. So we have confirmation of a deal in place to help bring down Iran's nuclear program. We've certified it 8 separate times, and these people still want to tear this deal down for, I don't know, going to war, I guess, because they have yet to come up with a new idea. We've been at this for decades, and we haven't been able to get anywhere. And these people just think you can throw at a deal, get something better, or I guess the other alternative is to go right back to where we were, where people were suggesting force be used against Iran and not really having any great solutions other than that. So the biggest criticism for most people involves the sunset provision. And basically what the sunset provision is this provision within the deal that sets an expiration on it. Now, this is not unusual for arms control agreements. Almost all of them have time limits put in place, which is why so many result in follow-on accords once confidence is built between both sides, because after a set period of time, you can certify and confirm that, you know, both sides are interested in maintaining a healthy relationship and an active deal. The cap on Iran's low-rich uranium stockpile remains in place until 2030. So it's impossible to produce a nuclear weapon with 300 kilograms of low-enriched uranium, which they're not going to be able to do due to the caps that are put in place. So this is a good deal. Now, Mike Pompeo is somebody who wants to rip this up. So when he is up for confirmation, I think that the Democrats should be making a big fuss of this. And I think we should ask him to explain why he doesn't believe the deal is working and provide supporting evidence to why it is not and what his alternative is. As to why would it be a better alternative to rip apart a deal that we are in with other countries on for not having a deal in place and being back to square one. How does that benefit us? We should make that a key point of our confirmations. He should have to answer questions around this because this could be a very dangerous course that we go down. Now, the good news, if you're feeling depressed about this because, you know, Trump wants to get rid of the Iran deal, Rex Tillerson kept us in it, not because he necessarily believed in the deal, but because he saw that we had a working relationship with a lot of allies on this deal, and we should sustain that. And Mike Pompeo will, you know, feed into Donald Trump's darker sides. The good news is Congress can certify it on their own. So if the president refuses to certify the deal, Congress can go ahead and vote to certify it, adding just one more huge reason as to why voting this November is so important. We have to put in place a Congress that is going to ensure the security of the United States and is going to ensure, as best we can, that young men and women don't have to go fight an unnecessary war and die on foreign soil away from their home, away from their families, away from their children, because a bunch of old geezers couldn't get their act together and think that war is a better alternative than a diplomatic solution. So make sure you get out and vote this November to make sure we have that Congress in place. And with that, I go ahead and I'll bid you adieu. Hopefully, if you got a team in the tournament this weekend, they do well. I personally will be rooting for my alma mater, Xavier University. Let's go X. But I hope you have a good weekend. And remember, be the change.